This is the Fine Art Studio, University of Cumbria, Brampton Road campus. Fantastic studio space for fine art, interdisciplinary making, and it's north facing. So lovely light, and yeah, just a great facility for undergraduate students.
This is Research Spotlight at Cumbria.
And there's a lot of it too. I mean, you know, they've got big spaces, they've got room to build big things. There's another studio downstairs where they make really big, which is sort of for dedicated larger work.
We've got a 2D studio and a painting studio, a 3D studio.
So there's no limit on making. You know, students can come and make a 10-foot high sculpture or 12-foot painting, and we encourage that sort of to go for it and say, well, if it's a heroic failure, that's fine, we'll learn a lot, but there's no limits, really.
Yeah, I mean, this is the only time in their life, potentially, that they can go as wild as they want, really, in terms of scale and materials and access to workshops and stuff. So we do encourage them to kind of go big if they can.
In this podcast series, we're profiling our researchers, hearing in detail about their work and the impact this has on wider society.
On the Cutlery Studios, we can actually see Scotland out the window as well. I mean, that must be inspiring for all kinds of reasons. You know, you're not closing a box, you can actually see somewhere that might inspire you to create.
It's a lovely campus. I'm Katie Little, I'm Senior Lecturer in Fine Art here at Brampton Road.
And my official title, I'm going to use it, is Dr. Martin Fowler. So I'm the Programme Leader and Senior Lecturer in Fine Art.
And I'm Chad McHale, and I'm a part-time lecturer in Fine Art.
Great stuff. Well, thank you very much for your time. Looking forward to our conversation. This whole podcast series is trying to highlight innovation, creativity, research as well. And I haven't spoken to artists before as part of this series. Zoologists, we've spoken to business people. What you're doing, though, perhaps about yourself, first of all, you're involved in games design. So I guess when it comes to art can be anything, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was involved in games design. I'm not now. I'm now teaching fully on fine art. But yeah, it can be absolutely anything, yeah. And I think this campus is testament to that. I mean, all of the different ways that the students are working is incredible, but they also collaborate in lots of different ways as well. So.
And Martin, you've been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
When it comes to how art has changed and perceptions of art, how has it changed in two decades?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's probably still going through a transition from, well, obviously 2012 the university came into being, and before that it was Cumbria Institute of the Arts, and that legacy basically goes back 200 years to Tully House. So we're 1823 in terms of fine art education in the city, so we've got a fantastic legacy. I think it's probably still going through a transition in the sense that the universities, and I think this is sector wide, are probably still trying to come to terms and understand what an art college model is, and particularly fine art studio practice. And so there's pros and cons within that, but I think a lot of it is about what happens when those two very different sort of ecologies come together. And I think that presents opportunities but difficulties simultaneously, you know? So that would probably be the big change for me, I think.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we speak two different languages. You know, the universities are verbal and art colleges are visual, and the universities have quite a lot of difficulty accommodating the visual within their structures. It's not straightforward.
And as we're hearing, I suppose, in the world of that's out there, you know, with things like these things, I'm looking at my mobile phone, you know, people creating art in reels and Instagram posts all the time. Art itself, I guess, has changed, the technology has changed. And I suppose when it comes to, you know, sharing that and infusing the next generation of artists, you know, your task has become that bit harder because outlets of art have changed because of technology.
Yeah, that people can make things more easily now means it sort of puts the onus on us to make it critical. If you know, if you can make anything, then you know you need to be able to assess what it is that you've made. And
is it fun? Is it still a challenge when you began the jobs you're doing? Each of you, do you still get the same buzz and the same joy of doing
absolutely.
The job?
Yeah, oh yeah,
because it's essentially, like Chad says, it's essentially a kind of material thing and a human thing. So you always have that kind of texture and substance, and obviously, the ethos of the course is to enable students to pour out that which is within. You know, we're not here to sort of say, well, we'll fill you up and make you valid. You're arriving valid, and we're going to help you get an even stronger voice. So for us, you know, each individual student, it's a whole world within that person and a whole world of potential within that voice. So that's the gift that doesn't stop giving, if you like,
Absolutely.
You know? So.
And one of the lovely things we've started doing over the last couple of years is introduced making week at the beginning of every term. So we kind of come up with a theme about what the students might make for the first week. So for example, when they come back this term, they'll be making costumes and props. So we had loads of fun this week as a team downstairs in the costume department, pulling out things and sparking ideas for ourselves about, well, if we were going to do this, what would it look like? And then obviously that then kind of passes into the students. So yeah, I think that enthusiasm for all of us is,
The idea of making week is that it's a kind of warm up for them. It's them getting their hands dirty quickly and not having to think too much about it, but just make something. We're not, you know, it's not going to be assessed, not going to be valued. We're just going to get to know each other, and in that process, we'll make something funny, you know.
Yeah, because I think the thing about, like, as we touched on before, about being a part of a university structure is that sometimes that structure is not really the way that anyone would make work within a studio setting. So we have to really finally balance that in terms of how do we introduce this to potential fine artists or, you know, emerging fine artists in the way that will work for them when they leave university, and kind of introduce structures about how might you get started in the studio and how might you develop your ideas. So it's around that, and then things like assessment briefs and being assessed will come in later on, and that's part of the kind of university structure. So it's just a real fine balance between those two things.
I'm looking forward to hearing, or seeing, I should say, some of these costumes. Sounds fascinating already. Who wouldn't be inspired to see that? Brilliant. The podcast is, we're looking at research and the kind of areas that you're individually looking at, but I understand collaboratively as well. Do you want to talk us through about the work you've done and the impact it's had?
Yeah, well, what we've introduced in the last year, because Chad's only just been with us for a year, he's a new member of staff, is because there was a change in the course management, we realised there was an opportunity to sort of reboot and refresh the course. So we introduced a project called Know Thyself first year, first semester, and the idea is that it's really about the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. The idea being that the students arrive with this kind of Pandora's box of lived experience, if you like, and we're going to help them to unpack that and say, okay, you know, in this, you know, in your terms and your experience, your family's histories, etc., what do we find? And kind of just go through that quite methodically, but quite intuitively and playfully as well. And that, we believe, and we're seeing the results, I think, it really empowers the students and enables them. And it gets them through, like Chad was kind of implying, that sort of initial inhibition and self-consciousness, which is a real barrier when you're going to make stuff. It plugs them into stuff which is really substantial and meaningful to them, rather than just generic or prescriptive or whatever. So that is really the kind of line through the course, if you like, is this idea of know thyself. And then, as Chad says as well, it kind of puts you in a more critical mindset where you can start to say, okay, I took those things for given, for granted. But now when I look back, when I actually scrutinise that received wisdom and those conventions, oh, right, okay, actually, it's more complex than I thought. So, for example, you know, if, like, often in an undergraduate tutorial, a student will say, you'll say, well, what's your ideas? What would you like to make? And they'll maybe say, well, I'm thinking about feminism. So that's not a starting point because it's too broad, obviously. Mm. It's a big banner term. If you then have a conversation about, well, what did your grandmother do for a living? And as an example, that question was posed to an undergraduate student a couple of years ago, and we found out that her great-grandmother had been a washerwoman on the west coast of Cumbria. Mm. And then that then brought in a whole range of materials and objects and images, washing lines, etc., etc., that then made a really substantial, lovely, engaging body of work. So that's really the kind of underpinning ethos.
So they find an emotional root in the work. That's the important thing. Otherwise, you know, it can just be a sort of exercise.
And everyone's got different stories. I mean, a great example there, but I'm sure you've even more where people have brought something that perhaps they've gone back and asked their family and learned something themselves and been impressed. And it's all valid, it's all art, you know, and it can be interpreted different ways. So you're coming equipped with something rather than waiting to be taught, and that light bulb moment is already in there, isn't it? You've already got it.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like a big kind of database or reservoir of images that they then open up.
Yeah.
And if you're going to make art making, if you do it properly, is really attritional. You need a lot of stuff to fire at it. You know, you need images or objects. And it gives them that ammunition, if you like, so they don't run out. They get into a kind of groove and they can just run with it. So for us, it's really exciting, you know. Mm. Well, we had Briar, who's going to go into year three this coming month. Briar, again, from the West Coast. So I got, you know, pretty austerity-impacted post-industrial landscape. So she made a crochet doppelganger of herself, life-size, and then took that on a kind of walking tour of, I think it was Harrington is her town, but in the company of her granddad, who had worked in the heavy industry in the area, which is obviously now completely erased. And the two of them, this doppelganger and her grandfather, made this tour around, and he would say, well, this is where this street was, now all gone, obviously. So it was a kind of hauntological thing as well as an artistic thing, like a psychogeography almost. So yeah, that was just fascinating, because obviously we don't know anything about that, but it was incredibly important as a story, not just for her, but her grandfather and their community, you know, so.
Yeah, and she ended up with this funny enigmatic object, this crocheted copy of herself.
I know University of Cumbria, a very important part of university life, has been part of Cumbria, the place. So I suppose that's a great example where, you know, somebody who studies here, it's actually not only exploring for themselves, but also adding to a bit of the story of Cumbria by doing this kind of work.
Yeah, it's socially purposive in many ways. And, it, you know, because it's not just about that individual, individualised, it's about that individual within a lived history, a lived experience within a community. And the sort of, you know, into the kind of the childhood of that place and of those people. And so I think it's a way of kind of, well, I suppose for us, it's a way of kind of pushing back at some of the philistinism that we face as a society, you know, which is very much predicated on a financial metric or something monetarized like that. It pushes back against all that towards something which is human.
One of the things we do with the students when they first come in at level four is we get them to create a timeline of their own lived history, and so they'll go back and speak to their family and they'll look at what was happening politically and socially and plot this on a timeline. So again, they can look at obviously their own history, but then other people's history, and make these connections about where do we share experience as well as differ. And so that's a kind of way, I mean, it's, we call it an inventory of traces, but it's a way for them to then excavate all of this information and then have something to begin to kind of work from with that. So,
as Martin says, we must get some fantastic stories, you know.
Oh, incredible. People,
and the students themselves perhaps weren't aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think at the same time it's a sort of deconditioning process as well, because they're having to examine the values of their parents and their families and the way they've been brought up and the values of the school has given them, and I think that's really beneficial. My experience of going to art college was that it was just a deconditioning process, kind of, you know. You had to look at what you'd become and how you'd become it.
I think as we're asking the students all the time to look at things critically, don't just take this received wisdom that you might get from the TV or the media, or let's unpack this and look at it critically, and how does this impact your life and how does this connect to your own experience? So, yeah, it's really important.
That's right. We were talking about that this morning, about, because we were looking at all those fabrics that we've got for them to make their costumes with, and talking about how we might give them samples of the fabrics and get them to talk about what each kind of fabric suggests for them, you know, a woolen blanket or a sequined, you know, and that these materials actually have built-in associations, and they've got to sensitize themselves to the materials that they're using, because the materials actually carry implicit values in them.
Is anybody else doing this? This sounds fascinating work. Is it something that's original to Cumbria?
No,
I think we're pretty much outliers, or well, maybe we're pioneers. There was a conference in Canterbury last week that Chad and I were able to attend, and we sort of presented this model, if you like, this pedagogical model at the conference, and the feedback was really, really good. Because, well, one of the other reasons we implemented it was because we didn't want to be another generic fine art course. We wanted to be distinctive, and because we're in a very unique place. We're not Manchester or London. You know, Cumbria has got a very distinctive history, etc., and situation. And we wanted to tap into it. And as artists ourselves, that approach underpins what we do too. So it's kind of intrinsic, and we believe in it. I think the other thing that's critical within it is also enabling the students to not just establish this framework, but also have intuition and use intuition as well, and imagination. So it's never a didactic thing. It's never a kind of linear thing. It's something that can change and it's in flux. And I think we're also trying to encourage them to be intuitive within that when they need to be, which again is a kind of push back against the school system, which they were never enabled to be that. You know, art was always reduced to a tick box kind of experience, you know? So I think, as Chad says, a lot of this is kind of reprogramming or creating a safe space where that stuff doesn't happen. You know, it's much more creative as opposed to anti-creative.
Definitely, we're trying to incubate people who are going to contribute to a public debate. If you're an artist, you're a public figure. You know, you're exhibiting to the general public. You've got something to say to them. So, you know, you've got to find your voice. That's not an easy thing. That's what's crushed in the general educational system. It's not easy to find it again. You learn how to do it. We're continuing. You know, it's not like we've found how to do it. Every year, you're trying to find out what's working and what's not, and it's not straightforward at all, is it, to unpack all this stuff?
No, in many ways, we've made life more difficult because we've complexitized it. Yeah. You know, that's where the contradictions are. It's where the substance is. So, you know, we're really happy with that problematizing, if you like. Yeah. You know,
and I think the fact that, you know, as Chad says, we're also still working this out in our own work as practitioners, and the students are aware of that. This is a kind of two-way conversation. Yeah. So it's about creating a community and a culture which accepts that and kind of celebrates that. I think.
Yeah, it feels very pure. I mean, I imagine you got a good reaction at that conference you mentioned before, because you know this is this is like you said at the start of the interview. It's not telling. No. It's kind of it's working with which feels right for education, isn't it? Because when you come here at 18, you've already had some life.
Yeah.
You know, if you come from Cumbria, perhaps bringing something from their part of Cumbria or wherever. Yeah. Therefore, you know, you're not wiping it out and starting from scratch. You're nurturing it and growing it.
Yeah, because like we said, because those people arrive valid, whereas what we're doing is a reaction against what you would call the banking system of education, where we just fill them up and then they leave valid. You know, that's anathema as far as we're concerned. So. For us, this is a much more sort of organic process. So it's really about an organic intellectual process, really, which is much more about fertilising the ground. So the human's at the centre of that, you know?
And in a way, all we've really got is a few tips that we've gathered over 30 years, kind of, you know, like a tip like you have to work really hard because you have to make it 5 times wrongly before you make it right. Like, it is 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration, you know, but...
And from what you say, it's working. You know, it's quite a new approach.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, as you just said, you're learning as much as anybody. Mm. Is it working?
Yeah, well, obviously, one of the university metrics is the National Student Survey, which happens every year where they survey the year three of every degree course. So the students get a chance to feedback on a sort of metric of questions. So we're up, we're really high scoring on that because the student feedback is really, really positive. What we did at the same time, which was Katie's idea, was to mix the studio. So rather than having a year one, year two studio, everyone's mixed together so people can share good practice, they can share thoughts and ideas. And it sounds cliche, but it does become a community, you know. And because we've got a good ratio of staff to student, again, we get to know people really quickly. It's not a sort of machine experience. So I think we've enabled it in a number of different ways.
Yeah, I think that that discursive feel is not limited to students making work in the studio. We carry that through how we deliver the programme and plan the programme. We're constantly asking for feedback from the students and changing things every year in accordance to that. And that keeps us excited about the programme and what we're delivering, but it also means that the students get full input and they're really kind of co-designing the programme with us, which is lovely as well. So, yeah.
And exhausting, I'm guessing, as well. I guess you're having to catch up and maybe, you know, because being bright young things, as I imagine most of them are, you know, they've probably already come with, you know, ideas and like you say, if they fail on that one, try something else. And maybe you're trying to, you know, guide, not stop, but guide, you know, something that's new still to you.
Yeah.
You put things in front of people, it's more like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're working, you just put that beside them or that beside them and that beside them. The more you can throw, and then you let them choose what it is, what excites them from that.
Yeah, I think it would be more exhausting if we were trying to prescribe the students to do something and they had completely different ideas. This isn't that. Yeah. In a way, it's like, okay, what are your ideas? And we'll support you and facilitate you in doing that. So I think it's less kind of onerous in that sense. And the other thing is the demographic of the cohort. It's not all just young students. You know, we've got a whole range of ages.
Probably
40%
are mature students.
Yeah, so you've got a really nice dynamic as well in terms of people's lived experience. Yeah. sharing stories with each other.
Right.
It's brilliant.
It is an intergenerational cohort, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right. Fantastic.
Mm. Exactly. Where's it going? What's your kind of your ultimate dream or aim, perhaps? You know, is it to exhibit some of this? You mentioned before some of the work they've done, in the past. Is it going to be forming a research project that'll be published and toured? Will there be a display? Maybe. Do you think of some of the highlights from this process?
Possibly. We're obviously exploring opportunities to exhibit in the city centre. I suppose for me, one of the key things is, like I said at the conference last week, is I don't want to see the students working in Wilko's at the end of this degree. I want to feel like we've enabled them to go back to their communities or wherever they're going to go and be vital people within that community, because I think we're going to need them. I think we're going to need those critical, engaged, socially purposive people. So I think if anything, that's the thing that I would hope that this thing does or enables.
Absolutely.
People who've got a voice, and aren't afraid to talk.
Yeah, and like obviously, you'll hear it's a sort of cultural capital, if you like that term or not. But so they have that thing that they can go out and we've not filled their heads with nonsense. You know, we're not filling them with pipe dreams about, you'll go to London and get a gallery and a dealer and you'll be having shows in New York. That's probably not going to happen. And that's probably a good thing that's not going to happen in many ways. So, because I think it's almost like the sense of that this local or localism is really critical to this thing, mm-hmm. And Ruskin said in the times of great art, all art is provincial, and I really believe that. I think the Londons of this world are essentially the kind of dead spaces in many ways. It's what's happening to the side of those things that's usually more vital. We only understand it 30 or 40 years later.
I get the impression you probably will be lighting something in students who come, and then they'll go away thinking, right, this is just a start. You know, they haven't, like you said, they haven't been filled up, and you've got your degree and off you go. It'll be, actually, I'm going to go back, I'm going to spread the word. Mm-hmm. So is that the aim, to try and sort of obviously inspire students to go away and spread the word about art and about the area that they live and be proud of where they're from?
I think so. Well, that would be one of them, wouldn't it?
That's, and to have that
would be a good outcome.
To have that confidence in that voice that they have and that lived experience. I mean, the whole thing, the philosophical or theoretical basis of all this is from Gramsci, Antonio Gramsci, the Marxist philosopher who was persecuted under Mussolini. And it's his idea of this organic intellectual. So this isn't a top-down thing, this is a bottom-up thing. And that's really the driver, is to enable those people, you know? So it's not Plato's Academy, this is the Roman Agora reimagined, you know what I mean?
And we do have students going back out into the community and setting up their own art organisations or setting up various kind of art opportunities to then bring other people in. And so they are going out and growing their own things from this. It's not once they leave here, it's all over situation. You know, they go back in and then refertilise their kind of towns or wherever where they come from, which is really important.
And that's something that we'd like to see, and we're trying to encourage, that there be studio provision in Carlisle, that there be some kind of artist-led space, that there be maybe artist-led studios, that there starts to be a bit of a scene here, kind of. That would be a very good outcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there is an image that fine art isn't for everyone, and maybe it's because people don't understand what art actually is, and it can be anything, as you said at the start of the conversation. And do you think, again, this is perhaps the challenge that we all face now, to try and knock down a few barriers, and maybe this is a way of doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's that other way of being in the art world, which is about mystifying things and, I don't know, making it seem like, well, you're either valid or you're not valid, and that's complete antithesis of what we're about, you know?
Yeah, because I think often, certainly in my perspective, the avant-garde is essentially a sort of rear guard. You know, they're not actually breaking down barriers, they're actually just protecting the ground that they've won, which is really just comes down to, or is really just in the service of a small elite. So it becomes a very exclusive, closed world, and we're really obviously against that. And often, from my side of things, often that work's not interesting at all anyway. So we're not really identifying with that sort of scene, if you like. We're doing something much more vital and interesting, I think.
And inclusive. Yeah.
And talking of which, obviously prospective students will be listening to this very podcast, and I'm sure they've been inspired and certainly curious about, why they should maybe look at this as an option for the future in the coming years. What would you say to them if there's somebody who's listening to this who's still not quite convinced, perhaps a bit daunted, that, they don't have an interesting story in their words or in their mind? How would you convince them to take a chance and come and have a look, at least, at this course and this sector?
I think everyone's got a story, yeah. or multiple stories. And like, the story could be the smallest thing, you know? And, like, a lot of this is driven by the research I did when I did my PhD. And we were talking earlier about the tattoo that you'd just been to. So part of that was my recollections of being taken to the tattoo when I was seven. And then, well, what's the impact of, you know, seeing this, you know, these ranks of soldiers and bayonets and all the rest of it? And just unpacking that memory, again, as a font of imagery, etc., which then has meanings and symbols and all the rest of it.
So I think you have a response. Your response to it.
And so I think everyone's got that lived experience, or as we said, you know, it could be the lived history of their family or their grandfather or whoever. So I think it's. I don't think it's a daunting thing. I think the other way is the more daunting way. When you're coming in and you're not really plugged into anything, that's when you're going to struggle, because you're just kind of floating. This is about saying, right, okay, you're plugged into this thing already. You always have been. Let's have a look at it, you know?
And it's a visual way of telling a story, and people are interested in other people's stories at the end of the day. I mean, they're just inherently interesting, aren't they? Yeah. So, you know, like making a piece of music or writing or whatever. I mean, everyone's got their own way of sort of expressing their story. Yeah. But if you like making and you're a visual person and you enjoy kind of getting stuck into materials, then everyone's got a story, and just come and kind of play and explore it, really, I think.
And there's that thing about once you find your own story, you find that your maybe the main elements of your story aren't so different from other people's stories, and actually that you have quite a lot in common with other people, and then you can be the voice for those people. Then you become articulate and you're contributing,
and it's a great kind of playground in a way, because obviously we've got all these shared symbols and myths and kind of superstitions and any number of things that we can start to bring on to put on the table and play around with and challenge and turn them upside down and turn them inside out and all that, and that's when you've really got something exciting.
And that's our job, essentially, isn't it? When they come here, it's our job to kind of help them play around with these things, turn them inside out, look at them in different ways. Like that's the bit that we do, or we enable. It's
because very often a student will come in with something really exciting, but obviously because they're too close to it, they can't see it, and we're like, well, hold on a minute, this is gold dust what you've got here. We need to spend a bit of time with this, you know, and that you can then see the confidence really grow in them, because they're like, oh, right, actually, I arrived thinking I didn't really have very much, but actually you're telling me I'm well off. Yeah, let's do it, you know?
And so, is that the advice you'd give to students, and to come with an open mind, but also
stuff,
don't hide, you know, your own attributes and your own kind of experience, because that could be the very thing that you want to help and nurture.
Yeah, you know, if you grew up by the seaside, okay, we just, you know, there's maybe something about that experience, so it could be any number of things, but, you know, you bring it and we'll have a go at it, you know, and it really puts us in a driving seat, I think.
Sometimes students arrive thinking that their things, you know, painting or drawing or whatever, and then they leave us doing performances or installation, or, you know, there's a real kind of exploration and finding things you didn't know about yourself before you come here, which is the beauty of it, really, I think.
And all that's not to say that we don't try and introduce them to what's happening in contemporary art or things that we think are important within the history of fine art. I mean, we do everything we can to put things in front of them that will excite them.
Yeah, it's really important to know what's gone before you and also what's happening in the current context. Yeah. And, you know, we do a lot of trips and go to different cities and different galleries and talk about kind of the work that we find there and then how that relates to their work. And that's a huge part of what the students do, is about unpacking what they do and connecting it to all of this other kind of context. So,
and deconstructing other people's work to find out how it's put together and what the ideas are behind it and so on.
Yeah. And do you think at this moment in time that because of where you're placed as well, I mean, you can, you know, there's Edinburgh, Glasgow, not far, Manchester, Liverpool, ideally placed to go and get inspiration, history of art, but also the future?
We always joke that everywhere's about an hour away from Carlisle. It's about an hour in any direction, you're going to get somewhere. So.
Like, I suppose the ethos is kind of modern art for modern times. That's what we're about.
Yeah.
Wow, fascinating conversation. I'm almost inspired to sign up and try again.
<Do
and
it>.
Well, look, as we conclude our conversation, I've got one question which I'm going to put to each of you perhaps individually, and it's this. Is if you were to choose one word that describes the kind of person you are, what word would it be?
stoical.
Why?
You're the least stoical.
I just said it. What are you going to say?
No idea.
Go on, why
the stoical one.
Oh, come on, no, I think I'm the stoical one. I think you do.
I think dissident would do me. Dissident, you know, to take a dissident position. And or contrarian, right, we're going to take a contrarian, contradictory position on this thing that's been presented as a given.
How about innovative? Because you're always looking to try and...
Yes, you know, that
whether,
will do.
Whether it's games, or it's this, or it's the future, or it's, you know, local going national, national back to local.
That sounds good. I'll take that one, Nigel.
Well, listen, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts good. In this wonderful space as well. I mean, it is an inspiring space, as you've proved in this conversation. I don't think we've had the same conversation in a darkened room downstairs. Right, yeah. So this has been great, and I wish you all the best for the coming term, and good luck.
No, it's been great to have a chat.
Yeah, really good. Thank you.
Enjoyed
it.
Cheers.
Thanks for downloading this edition of Research Spotlight at Cumbria. Be sure to subscribe and spread the word.